Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end a 1 or 2 hour show to keep the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sort of like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine and sports veterans and greats. The 4th of 26, saw the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with five knights at the round table. Five Philly guys, diversified and educated.
What up, good people? It's about that time. It's Thursday, and of course, you are once again live in the War Room, brought to you, of course, by War Room Sports, and we'd like to welcome you all to the War Room Super Bowl Spectacular. I'm one of your hosts, Devin McMillan. Alongside me is my Super Bowl team of Paul Johnson, James Williams, Akil Bayon, and B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander. We got a great show for you tonight. We're hyped because we're going to talk anything and everything related to the Super Bowl. At 6:30, ESPN's Rob Parker will be back in the building to give us his thoughts on the big game. Then at the top of hour number two, we're going to chat with a very special guest, Pro Football Hall of Fame cornerback and six-time NFL champion Herb Adderley. You do not want to miss that. So stick around with us for a great rundown this evening. And as usual, we want to hear from you guys tonight. So when we open up the Digital Extreme Technology Hotline, call in and tell us what's on your mind. That number, again, is 323-410-0012. But y'all know what time it is now. It's birthday time.
It's my birthday. Yay!
All right, our first birthday this week is one Robert Allen Bob Greasy. He turned 66 today.
It's my birthday.
Yay! Jimmy. Bob Greasy, what do you think of when you hear the name Bob Greasy?
Yo, I think of an old Anglo-Saxon male quarterback with glasses whose son just wasn't that good.
Kill, Bob Greasy.
Man, when I think of Bob Greasy, I think of his son, yeah, who was average, Brian Greasy. I think of him as an analyst and that, you know, he was, above average quarterback for the Miami Dolphins. That's about it.
Yeah, basically the same here. I remember there was a time when his son was actually a decent fantasy quarterback, but that fell off real quick. So we're going to go ahead and move on from Bob Greasy and his kids. All right, the second birthday today. Jimmy, for the Laker fans out there, when Mr. Vlade Divac turns 43 today.
Birthday. Yay!
Vlade!
Vlade Divac, Jimmy, what'd you think of?
Yo, Vlade was my homie, yo, because Vlade was the best flopper in the history of the game, yo. But when Vlade did it, it was funny because he so overdid it that it became hilarious, yo. But Vlade had game. Can't stop remembering, Vlade was like a 7-foot magic.
He liked to floppy. Kill Vlade.
Yeah, yo, Vlade was nice, man. I mean, he was fundamental. He made 1 or 2 All-Stars. One of the best passing big men had post moves. I mean, you know, he was nice. Put European players on the map.
Okay. Yeah, he had that little falling out too with Drazen Petrovic, and they never really got to talk again before he died. I watched that
That's
on true. I think 30 for 30. That was kind of sad.
Yeah.
So the next birthday we got here is Sean Michael Elliott. So Sean Elliott from the Spurs. Kill.
My birthday. Yay!
What
yo,
do you think
Sean
of
Elliott.
You hear the name Sean Elliott?
When I think of Sean Elliott, I think of standing almost out of bounds, hitting that three-pointer to knock out the Portland Trailblazers in the playoffs, and he went on to win the title that year. And doing that after, I believe that was after his kidney transplant. But before his kidney transplant, yo, he was killing it. He was nice.
Yeah, Sean Elliott was nice, Jimmy.
Yo, I think of a baseline jump shot because second to my man Ron Anderson, they used to play for the Sixers back in the 80s. Yo, Sean Elliott had, like, one of the best baseline J's in the game. But Ryan Anderson was number one. But Sean Elliott, and also how he came back from that whole kidney fiasco. But he was a baller, though. He definitely was
right.
A baller. But this baseline jump shot was major.
B. Austin, what'd you think of when you hear Sean Elliott?
The kidney transplant, the heels over the line but not out of bounds, MJ giving him serious work. And, yo, shout out to my man Vlade Divac because he was, like, my favorite Laker of all time, and it's probably the second best center, probably the second best center behind the greatest center of all time.
All right, cool. So our last birthday. Another little pot shot at Shaq, huh?
It is what it is.
Our last birthday of the day, we actually talked about him during our numbers game. I don't know why he really came up, but Robert Pack turns 42 today.
Happy birthday,
yay! B. Austin, Robert Pack.
Yo, Robert Pack was like one of the first like super bums, and what I mean by that is like he was like nice, like he was too nice to really be a bum, but he wasn't quite nice enough to be like an all-star or anything like of that nature. Plus, he played for the Nuggets. But Pac-Man had bounce. Like, he was 6'2", and he would put his midriff and mid-area in your face if you was underneath the hoop. Like, you was catching a face full of manliness from Robert Pack early.
Kill Robert Pack.
Yo, Robert Pack used to just cram on people out of nowhere. He would, like, you know, he did the top of the key, like Brad said, 6'2 guard, small guy in the NBA. He'd keep crossing cat, go down the lane, then just bang on the center, like, yo, like, where'd he do that at? Like, it was,
yo,
like,
he was
had
he really
shocking, unexpected.
Two, he never really seemed like he was 6'2". Was he really that tall? That's what they listed him. Yo.
Like, KJ got all the acclaim, but Robert Pack had demeanor dunks, yo. Robert Pack.
Yo, hold on, though. What did he call him? He called him a superstar bum.
He called him a super bum.
Yo, he called him a superstar bum. Yo, Robert Pack, that's all I remember. Robert Pack is punching on cats. And I agree with you, Def. He wasn't no 6'2". There's no way he was 6'2".
Nah.
Yo, why he had the New Jack Swing, New Jack City, like, S-curl fade, though?
Yo, that's just what I was about to say. He had the dunks and he had the flat top looking like Play from Kid and Play or something like that. All right, but that's our birthdays today.
My birthday, yay!
So, Jimmy, we'll let everybody know what happened this week while y'all were on the grind.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about what happened while y'all are on the grind. This is brought to you by Philadelphia Auto Design. Anyway, the first thing I want to talk about is this. Your man Eddie House. Eddie House, like, gets fined for doing that whole Sam Cassell thing when he act like he got golden ads because he hit the big shot. But meanwhile, your man, KG, he actually punches. As a matter of fact, yo, he hit the ball. Who was it? Channing Frye. Hitting with a Hadouken right to his man region. And he gets nothing. So I just wanted to get you guys' opinion on that, starting with you, Dev. How can KG go around hitting people with Hadoukens and nothing happens to him?
Yo, first of all, KG, though I'm a fan, KG is a dirty dude. Secondly, I'm not too mad about the situation in general because Channing Frye has stopped shooting so many three-pointers. Come inside, he's like 6'10", 6'11", come inside the three-point line. But no, in all seriousness, it's just like the whole NFL thing with Andre Johnson. KG didn't get suspended because they had the Lakers on national TV that weekend. So they didn't, you know, the next game was against the Lakers. So the league didn't want to take KG out of that game, so they dropped the ball just like the NFL did.
Yo, that's hilarious, yo. Cause,
Eddie House is a bum.
Yo, but Eddie House got Hort. You can't knock him. He's a Hort. Yo, be awesome.
Yo.
What's your opinion?
Yo, Eddie House got fined because he's Eddie House. Like, yo, he should have walked quietly over to the bench and, like, sat down and been happy that they allow him to still be in the league when he's, like, 5'11 and can't dribble. So,
yo,
like, come on, man.
But
that, like,
that's what happened. That's what happened when you busting somebody's ass, though.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Hey, Bayern, what's your opinion on this whole thing?
Yo, the reason, first of all, I got to say the NBA, they didn't throw out KG.
Great cash, homie.
And when I think of Eddie House, I just think about Skip just smacking him in the back of the head. Rafer Austin just smacking him in the back of the head. So
that's what you're supposed to do to Eddie House.
That was hilarious.
That's what happened when you busted somebody. Yeah. Yo, I want to get you guys' opinion on something else. There's a possible stadium. Now they're saying also maybe an NFL team in L.A. So what's your guys' thoughts on that? Should L.A. get a football team, B. Austin?
I'm gonna go against the grain and say no. And the reason I say no is because much like D.C., it's a transient city. Like, don't get me wrong, there are your true diehard Redskin fans, but they're, like, far and few between as compared to a city like Cleveland, Chicago, Philly, even Oakland, you know, if you want to take it there. You know what I'm saying? So, like, L.A. doesn't really have football fans. That's why the two franchises that were there left. It's like a superficial market.
This sounds to me like you're saying that Washington doesn't deserve a team. Is that what you're saying?
I mean, they accepted McNabb as their quarterback. Who would do that?
Ooh, on the real though. I mean, it's L.A. It's a major market. You got.
It's a major market.
Yeah, I mean, you got to give
it. It's a major market.
But I think if they build the stadium, which they would do first, because they're basically going to build the stadium to try to lure one of the, you know, NFL teams to leave. And I think it'll be easy because there's several teams in the league right now who are frustrated.
Jacksonville.
Frustrated with their stadium situation. So it's like if they build it, they will come.
I agree.
Man, they've been talking about this L.A. getting a team thing for years. I mean, I guess they do need one market-wise, but really they don't because Hollywood and not that many people go to the games. I remember the Raiders game.
Yeah.
They had all, I guess, thugs going to the games, beating people up, and the Raiders fans, the Raiders players didn't even want to send their families. So who knows how it will turn out.
Okay. Jimmy, it's like the Raiders in the L.A. market is like, it's like too big to fail. It's like, yo, you can put a team there, and because there's 8 million people there, like, it's going to work, but it's kind of corny because they don't care.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. All right, now, next question I got is Ron Artest. It's a lot of people out there saying that he wants to be traded. He hasn't said it, but he's not going to say it, even if it's true. But he wants to be traded. There's a lot of rumors of different deals with him and Bynum going for Melo, which I don't believe is true, and nor would I want that to happen. But what's your guys' opinion on Ryan Artest wanting to be out of La La Land after winning the championship? I'm gonna start with you, D. Austin.
I don't know. I think the ball has something going on because I was surprised with Matt Barnes being injured. Initially, Matt Barnes came off the bench and was cutting into his minutes. Then Matt Barnes went down, and it was a perfect opportunity for Ron to just step up and really, like, ball out, and it's like he's distracted. Like, you know what I'm saying? I don't know what's wrong with the chemistry on the team, but there's mm-hmm. nothing like a few wins to cure all. So
one thing is he's tired of Phil Jackson and the organization criticizing him publicly. You know,
right.
You know, Phil Jackson, it's not his style to talk to you at practice. He's going to go on the media and blast you because that's one of his motivational tactics. And Ron is not really feeling that. But I've heard people say since it seems like Kobe may be slowing down a minute, you know, a little bit, people are saying they need to take that seriously and try to work some kind of deal for Melo, just looking towards the future. But I think you swap Ryan Artest for Melo, all hell's going to break loose as far as no defense being played and – it's going to take too long.
Can I just say something real quick? For real, Kobe's been slowing down for the last 5 years, man. Come on, man.
You notice I said people said. They say he's slowing
But here's the thing, though. Like, Melo plays less defense than me, and I don't play defense. So, I mean, unless they plan on winning every game 130 to, like, 110, I mean, he just doesn't play. But then again, Ron Artest ain't played no defense this year either. He looks like he hasn't been the same since they won the championship. To be honest with you, head looks like it's not the game.
No disrespect to Melo, because I like the ball, and I'm a supporter. But he got like Vince Carter type defense.
But Melo will give you 40 though.
True.
Always.
Dr. Bay, what's your thoughts on this, Dr. Bay?
Yo, if he's trying to get out of L.A. I mean, I don't know. He should just tough it out. I mean, when I first heard that, I was wondering if he was still seeing his psychiatrist, you know, just like, hey, you might need to sign up for a couple of more sessions just to learn how to handle the situation that's going on.
Yeah. All right, enough about Ron. Yo, some Eagles talk. I have a couple things to talk about in reference to the Eagles.
For one, of course, the franchise on Vic, and now they're saying they're looking at, you know, potential deals for Cobb. That's the one thing. And then they hire their offensive line coach to be their defensive coordinator. So what's going on? That's all. Bottom line is, what's going on, Dad? What's your opinion of all these?
First of all, with the Vic Cobb thing, I expected Vic to be franchised. They still shouldn't let Cobb go until, I mean, don't make a deal in the offseason. You know, the NFL's trade deadline is kind of weak, but keep him because you never know in those first few weeks the way Mike Vick plays, he might get injured. You hold on to dude as long as you possibly can before his contract is up. If it comes to the trade deadline and Vick is still healthy and he's still balling, then you trade Cobb.
Yeah.
The defensive coordinator thing, Castillo, I had to calm a lot of people down because, you know, it's a lot of Eagles fans ready to jump off bridges and everything. I had to remind them that coaches switch units all the time. This dude spent his whole career playing as a linebacker. And even when you're coaching the offensive line, you see defenses all the time. You watch film on defenses all the time. So I'm not saying it's impossible that he can do the job. I'm just going to sit back and let it happen.
To take up for the fans, because a lot of them are overboard, but at the same time, the media, the Daily News today, like the headline story was WTF, you know, in reference to the move. So, you know, a lot of people are questioning it, but I have seen a lot of coaches make the transition. A lot of people don't realize where coaches start at, because a lot of times they just want to get their foot in the door to get a job, and they work around just to, you know, become a head coach eventually one day.
The late, great Jim Johnson was an all-Big 8 quarterback at Missouri, and then he didn't get drafted. He signed in the league as a tight end. So people probably thought when he got the job, what the hell did he know about defense? And look what
look at our Hall of Fame guest tonight. Our Hall of Fame guest tonight, you know, switch sides. So, you know,
exactly.
It happens. It happens. B. Austin, what's your opinion of everything in Eagles land in terms of the Cobb thing?
We deal with logic, strategy, and tactics here pretty well in the war room. So I'm not going to deviate too far from what Dev said. My thing is, if you don't tag him, the only other real option is to offer him a deal that he may consider somewhat insulting and not take anyway, because, you know, the type of money that people are throwing around in Lemming land is ridiculous after just doing this for one season. So I'd rather tag him at, what is the tag, $12 million or $14 million for this year?
I think it's like $16.
At 16, or I'd offer him a deal that would average out to be like $5 or $6 million a season, which he's not going to really find palatable. So I'd rather see him get tagged. Definitely hold on to Cobb, although in a way my heart goes out to Cobb, because I feel he's good enough and has earned a spot to really start in this league.
It won't be with the Eagles, but he will.
Yeah,
I
hope Cobb is good, right. I see Cobb in San Francisco, for real. That's why I see him getting his start and his shine. The defensive coordinator, just kind of like y'all were saying, have said, you know, take it from this angle. Jim Johnson, Castillo's been with the Eagles organization for, what, 13 years?
Right.
Yeah.
And Jim Johnson is, in my opinion, top five, dead or alive, defensive coordinators ever to exist in the universe of history. So with him being that good, you know, and Castillo being on the other side of the ball coaching the O-line, who do you think Jim Johnson took pleasure in beating up on in practice? Who has seen more crazy?
Yo, you're crazy. Real quick, what's your thoughts, real quick?
Man, I don't have too many thoughts. Castillo, that happens all the time. Most people don't realize that a coach is bouncing around both sides of the ball. And the Vic Cobb thing, I think they should wait it out as long as possible to get as much as they can, but also ensure that they don't mess their team up, like Dev alluded to.
Yeah.
Because they possibly get hurt.
My opinion, real quick, is it's a matter of, like, only time will tell. But I know one thing. The first mistake or the first bad game the Eagles D have, they are going to let him and Reed have it. Anyway, that's enough of what happened while you're on the grind. Dev, take it over.
All right, y'all. That's what happened while y'all were on the Grizzly. All right, so it's time to pass that rock. So I'm going to I'm going to bring the ball up. I'm going to play the role of point guard today, and I'm going to tell everybody in the war room why I'm mad.
Why you mad, son?
Y'all know why I'm mad? I'm mad because I ain't got no damn PTR this week, so I'm going to go ahead and pass that rock out of this full court trap to my man Akil Bayon.
Good evening, War Room World. Tonight, I will take the time to enlighten some of you on how taxes and numbers work in sports. Now, we all remember how the Miami Heat acquired Christopher Wesson Bosch and LeBron Raymond James as free agents this year. There were all these teams, including their own teams, offering max NBA contract money. Now, the perception and statements have been that Wade, Bosch, and James all took less money and sacrificed to win a championship. LeBron, in an interview, said, "Well, the numbers are not finalized. I think my agent, Leon Rose, will take care of that," James said. "But all three of us are ultimately going to take less money because we wanted to all play alongside each other, and we feel like we can be great together. And hopefully Pat Riley and the rest of those guys, Mickey Arison, the owner, can bring some guys in to help us out, which we believe, you know, and as his idol Jay-Z would say, we don't believe you. You need more people." Now, the general public, as usual, ran with that and perpetuated that idea through every media outlet. Several months ago, myself and the other War Room generals looked into the matter just to see dollar for dollar what was really going on in our own debate and came up with a spreadsheet detailing max money in Chicago, Cleveland, Toronto, New York, and less than max money in Miami. Now, what the state of Florida has that Canada and the other three states do not have is 0% state income tax. Now, here is how the numbers break down. New York has 12% state and city income tax. Illinois has a 3% state income tax. Ohio has a 6% state income tax. Toronto, Canada has a 45% total of country/province tax. And Miami, Florida has 0% state income tax. Now, all federal income tax rates are 35% when you make above $374,000 in the United States. So let's look at each team. At the maximum of 6 years, $120 million, if you take out the federal and state income tax, the Chicago salary would have been $74 million. The Cleveland salary would have been $70.8 million. The Toronto salary would have been $66 million. And the New York salary would have been $63 million. At what Bosch and James signed for, $110 million, which is less money to play in Miami on before taxes, with only having to pay federal income tax at a rate of 35% and 0% state income tax while playing in Miami, Bosch and James will walk away with $72 million, and Wade will walk away with $70 million. Last I checked, that was more than 63, 66, the same as $70 million, and only $2 million less than 74 in Chicago. Now, how did they fool everyone into thinking they took less money? I have no idea. Now, to further complicate things, athletes also have to pay taxes in the states they play in for road games, but the bulk of their checks are taxed in their home state. Even the New York Yankees' Derek Jeter had a tax situation where the state of New York wanted their tax money, and he was like, "Nah, my home residence is in Florida. I don't live in New York." But that didn't work. So the moral of the story, ladies, gentlemen, and little ones, don't believe everything you hear and only believe half of what you see. And also, do your research. And with that, I shot fake, jab step right, drive left, in and out dribble with the left, and kick it out to be Austin, the hot block commander.
Man, Kill, that was a nice series of moves that you put on right there. It's a shame you had to pass because that's deserving of a shot. my PTR this week is short and sweet. Daniel Snyder is in the news again, and he's the owner of the Redskins. I was trying to think of an adjective to put in front of that. Should we put foolish there? Should we put imbecile? Any number of things. Well, On November 19th, Dave McKenna of the Washington City Paper published an article entitled "The Cranky Redskins Fan's Guide to Dan Snyder," from A to Z, Z being for Zorn, an encyclopedia of the owner's many failings. Now, I'm not going to take the time to read the article. You guys can go to the City Paper website and peep it. But let's look and examine a few things. 8-3 was Marty Schottenheimer's record over the last 11 games of the 2001 season, his first year as head coach. Snyder fired him anyway. $10, the amount that Snyder charged fans for admission to the team's workouts in the 2000 training camp. $20, the price Snyder affixed to Redskins Mania, the first Redskins scratch lottery ticket in 2009. $25, special group of standing room only tickets at FedEx Field in 2008. $30 for the Cletus, the robot, sports dolls. 31-36, Joe Gibbs' record under Dan Snyder. Gibbs won 140-65 without Snyder as the owner. So do we attest some of that, some of Joe Gibbs' failings to his owner? 700 pages, the length of a playbook brought to Redskins Park in 2006 by Al Saunders, who Snyder hired to call the plays for Gibbs. So Gibbs wasn't calling his plays. Daniel Snyder had stepped in and given Gibbs a play caller. Interesting fact there. Now, Daniel Snyder has taken offense in year 2011 and said, enough is enough, I can't stand no more. And so what he's decided to do is sue the city paper for $2 million in a libel suit claiming they have defamed him in the articles. Well, my opinion on this is really, really, really siding with or based on the city paper's publisher, Amy Austin. And it's really simple, guys. We don't believe there's anything wrong with publishing facts. Daniel Snyder, suck it up, man. And with that, I pass the rock to my left on the wing for that three ball work. James Williams, holler at them peoples, man.
Yo, Daniel Snyder's a noodle. Let me just hurry up because I'm going to be very brief. What's up, War Room? This is Jimmy, a.k.a. The Blueprint, a.k.a. The Black Ric Flair. And this week, like I said, I'll be very, very brief. I just have to say a few words about Yao Ming being voted in as a starter to the NBA All-Star game. I mean, this guy is hurt, and he's barely played. So for those that voted him in as a starter, shame on you, you pathetic piece of human excrement. No disrespect to Yao, but Yao hasn't been dominant in years. Yao is a no-mustache having with whiskers like a rat, and compared to Luis, he's whack. And that leads me to my main point. I'm disappointed in the people of Argentina. Where y'all at? I mean, Luis Scola's playing at an all-star level, but his people, unlike Yao, don't show him the support he deserves. So as for Yao, I hope you do recover and come back and play at an all-star level because you seem like a good person. We all know the NBA is full of fake tough guys. Shout out to Chris Bosh. And you don't seem to be one of them, so get well. I'm nice. And, yo, with that PJ coming down the lane, I throw up the oop.
Yo, cuz, all I got to say is the Ming dynasty will reign supreme in the NBA as long as Yao is alive, cuz he don't have to play one second. But I just want to talk real quickly about that putrid flag football walkthrough called the Pro Bowl. Even by meager Pro Bowl standards, that was a dreadful game on Sunday night. I honestly think that the NFL must dock the players' Pro Bowl checks if they play any semblance of defense. Look, I get it. Players are concerned about getting hurt in a meaningless game, and I don't blame them. So they go at it half speed, hoping to avoid any kind of contact. But with that said, perhaps it's time to just bench the Pro Bowl altogether. It's an idea whose time has passed. There's no good way to make it better. Football by nature is a violent sport. You take the violence out of it, and what you're left with is a shell of a game, and it's awful. Now, I was under the impression that many others shared the same sentiment as myself, because prior to the Pro Bowl, I asked, yo, who's watching the Pro Bowl? I asked around, and these are the responses I got. Man, I'd rather scrape the dead, chafed charcoal skin off the back of Forrest Whitaker's neck than watch the Pro Bowl. Or, I'd rather tongue kiss Whoopi Goldberg first thing in the morning before she brushes her dark black teeth and gums than watch the Pro Bowl. Or I'd rather drink a 32-ounce cup of lukewarm mule mucus than watch the Pro Bowl. But now that the ratings of Sunday's game have come out, yo, I think I've been blatantly lied to. Sunday's Pro Bowl was the most watched Pro Bowl since 1997, with 13.4 million viewers, the most watched show on television on Sunday, and the most watched All-Star game in any sport since 2009. So to put it another way, Sunday's Pro Bowl got the same ratings as some BCS games and World Series matchups. And although I'm completely baffled, based on these numbers, I guess it's safe to say that the dead, chafed charcoal skin on the back of Forrest Whitaker's neck still remains. And with that, I do a thundering Bam Bam Bigelow, Caucus Mountain Cave Dweller, Wild Ox Hammer Dunk to shatter the backboard.
And the crowd,
wow. Hey, B. Austin, you want to tell everybody how to get in contact with us?
Ladies and gentlemen, lemmings, fans, loved ones, lowlifes, and whoever else is listening to this beautiful show, check out our website at warroomsports.com. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message to us about our company, our show, or to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities with the War Room. If you'd like to send an email to one of the genius hosts personally, all of our individual email addresses can be found on that page. Become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/warroomsports, or you can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/warroomsports. Subscribe to and become a fan of ours on our YouTube channel, which is warroomsportstv.com. Again, that's warroomsportstv.com. Now, for general inquiries, email us at info@warroomsports.com. Join the JW Realty chat room right now during the show at blogtalkradio.com/the War Room. To get into the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. And with that, I'm going to let Dev let y'all know how you can get in contact with us on the phone tip. Dev?
All right. And if you guys want to call in during the show, that number is 323-410-0012. Press 1 if you'd like to talk to us. If you just want to call in to listen, just sit on the line. Don't press 1. But if you press 1, it's like raising your hand. And if we don't have too much traffic going on, then we'll most likely get to you. Jimmy, you got it. Jim, you there?
Yeah,
yo, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got it.
My bad.
Technical difficulties in the studio, y'all.
I got it. Mm-hmm. Austin. What I was saying is, I want to talk about something real quick before our guests even come on, and that's what's going on with all this strip club talk surrounding the Super Bowl. TMZ reports that several stealings in the strip club, and also a couple days ago, right? Wasn't that Heinz Ward?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, so I just want to ask you guys real briefly, what's going on with all the strip club talk at the Super Bowl? I mean, is it a big deal, or is the media making it a big deal and it really means nothing, or what?
My thing is, I mean, it's not a crime to go to a strip club, especially if you're not getting in any trouble. My only thing is this. These guys know that this kind of stuff has gotten people in trouble before. So I'm like, if you're playing in the Super Bowl, I mean, I don't want you to just not have a life, but why put yourself in a position to get in any trouble? Now, we haven't heard anything yet, but, maybe in a few days somebody's going to say that they got Ben Roethlisberger in the bathroom or something, and all hell's going to break.
I agree with that, because I think, obviously, like you said, you want them to be able to have fun, but you don't have to go to a strip club. It's going to become a story if it gets out. So don't give the media anything extra to be tied to possibly cause a distraction. So, hey, go out, enjoy yourself, but you don't necessarily have to go to a strip club or a club for that matter. Go have dinner, kick it, chill, You don't got to start making it rain smacking big booty girls on the butt, man. You don't got to do all that. Do it after.
Yo,
my thing is
the game is about to be over. You have a full off season. I mean, you have the whole off season to look at some Uchiwali. So it's not like you have to go before the game. You know what I mean? But I also think that it's blown out of proportion, too. Like, I could see if it was the night before the game. And, you know, I could also see if they was at the joint at second in Cambria. Shout out to my man, Iran. If they was at that joint, then they really need some issues. You know what I'm saying? But they weren't at that joint. You know what I mean? Like, they
was at a classy
gentleman's club. They tripping. They had a classy joint.
They was at one of the boob job clubs. All the girls got boob jobs instead of C-sections.
They was at the joint where you can't touch the joints.
Hey, but it was that was the first night they landed, too, so they couldn't wait to get to the show.
Because, honestly, from what I heard from this story is that Dallas, because I've never been to Dallas, I heard that Dallas is known for, like, premier gentlemen's clubs. Like, does anybody know about that?
Everything is bigger in Texas.
Yeah, when we first moved here, moved down here, you know, Dallas is supposed to be I guess I'm thinking like a, you know, the Bible Belt and, you know, really conservative Christian believing. But when you go on the highway, like they have all these strip clubs like broadcasted on the highway with signs and like warehouse buildings. Like, it's crazy. I was like, man, that's no joke.
Wow. So they got caught up in it.
Different culture though, so.
And, you know, what's the point of that? Anyway, some more Super Bowl talk. We got a guest coming on, Dev. You want to take it?
Oh, is he? No, he's not on the line yet.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know what I'm looking at. You can take it then.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
All right, we're going to get our guests on the line now then. You've all probably seen him on First Take on ESPN2, arguing with the likes Skip Bayless and some of the other guys. You've probably read his writing at ESPNNewYork.com, and you've definitely heard him here in the War Room. So we'd like to welcome back to the show Mr. Rob Parker. Come on, Rob.
What's happening, guys?
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
What's up, Rob? How you doing?
Doing good.
Good.
Yep. You ready for this this big game on Sunday?
I sure am. I talked about Aaron Rodgers from the start of the season, that this was going to be his breakout year, and I picked the Packers to win the Super Bowl from the start. And I'm sticking with them, and I'm all about the Packers. I know Pittsburgh has a good team, but I'm all about the Packers.
You're looking like a genius right now. Looking like a genius.
Well, I don't know. I don't know. I just – what's that?
No, go ahead. You can finish.
No, I was just saying, I don't know. I mean, just from the start, I mean, I thought Ted Thompson, the general manager of Green Bay, was smart when he was tired of the – I'm not retired, and Brett Favre, he knew he had a good quarterback, and Aaron Rodgers, to me, possesses everything you want in a quarterback. Escapability, he can run the football, was what, second in rushing for quarterbacks behind Michael Vick. He has a strong arm, he has an accurate arm, he's not afraid to go into the end zone if he has to. I mean, I like his game all the way around. He's a thinker. I don't know how you can't like this guy and the future. He has really the great future ahead of him. He could win a Super Bowl in his third year as a starter. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Right. Well, let's stay on the topic of Aaron Rodgers. Rob, I got a question. Now, a lot of people are saying that the Packers can't win without a great performance from Aaron Rodgers. And first of all, let me ask you, do you agree with that? And then secondly, if the Packers do win and Rodgers indeed has a good game, does that fully take him out of the Brett Favre shadow in Green Bay?
Yeah, I don't know about he has to have a great game. He had a terrible second half against the Bears, and they won because they have a good defense. They're the fifth-best defense in the NFL, and they got playmakers. Woodson, Matthews,
right.
I mean, even Rajay, the interception against the Bears, B.J. Rodgers, I mean, look at he caught the ball with his hands, a big man like that ran, and they got playmakers on that team. So I'm not saying Aaron Rodgers has to throw for 500 yards from the win. I don't think that's true. I just think if you look at his numbers, especially in the postseason and especially indoors, I mean, they didn't win the game, but he had 400 yards, four touchdowns against Arizona a couple of years ago in that game that they lost. And then if you look at the game against Atlanta indoors, I mean, he went crazy. And the other part is only five quarterbacks
since 1990 have thrown for more than 383 yards against the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, and Aaron Rodgers is one of them.
Hey, wow. Rob, real quick, bringing back that Arizona game from last year.
I think that was two years ago, right?
No, it was last year. It was last season.
But I thought they didn't make the playoffs last year.
You're talking about the overtime game, right?
No, the one I thought that they – wasn't that 2 years ago against Arizona, or was that last year?
Yeah, that was last year.
Yeah, that was last year. I had a lot of arguments
with people about that, saying that he choked when the game was on the line, but I disagree because if you look at that play, first of all, he was face masked all the way to the ground. And
yes.
It also looked mysteriously like the tuck rule that they would have called for Tom Brady had it been him in that situation. So I thought he played a great game in that one and didn't get enough credit for what he did in that game. But that's just
I thought his numbers were through the roof, and he just didn't, you know, the play at the end kind of soured the whole thing. But if you really look at that performance that he put on, it was pretty spectacular. So I just think that they have that going for him. And, of course, you know, we know what Pittsburgh can do. Obviously, they're trying to go get a third Super Bowl with Ben Roethlisberger leading the way. So they have a lot to play for. And they've been there, done that, and have the experience. So I expect it to be a really good game.
Yeah. Rob, this is Jimmy. How you doing? I have a question about the other side of the ball. The top three finishers for Defensive Player of the Year are all in this game. But speaking of the top two, who do you think is the bigger problem for the opposing offense, Clay Matthews or Troy?
That's a great question because I think they're both, because they finished 1-2 Defensive Player of the Year and only by two votes, so they're so close. I think the Steelers secondary is questionable, and if Troy Polamalu doesn't play well, I think they're in trouble. So I'll say Troy Polamalu because I think with a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, if he's not there to make some plays, they're going to be in trouble because – That secondary is not the greatest, and they have some issues back there.
Yeah, true that. Hey,
good,
Brad, you have a question?
Great question, Jimmy. I actually would like to throw Chuck in there, Charles Woodson, because I think he's gonna make some plays. Rob, if you had one game to win, like these two teams do on Sunday, which QB are you choosing to go into battle with between Ben Roethlisberger and Aaron Rodgers?
It's funny. We did this on First and Ten. Michael Wilbon wrote a column on ESPN.com about it. He picked Ben Roethlisberger. And,
he always does.
Yeah, he did. He picked Ben. And, some people would pick Tom Brady. Some people would pick Drew Brees, you know, there's all kinds of guys you can pick if you pick anybody. I picked Aaron Rodgers, and Skip thought I was crazy because he hasn't done it. But my point is, at some point, even all the great quarterbacks who do it, you have to do it for your first time. And I just think when I see the potential in this guy, I don't see there's anything that he can't do. And I think given the situation or circumstance, he can do it. But the thing about Ben, and we know he's made big plays, he can be terrible for a half or three quarters where he can't get anything done, and then he'll wind up making that completion that'll seal the game or do, you know, end the game essentially. So people think about that. And I know the first, when you look at the two Super Bowls, the first one they won, he was terrible in that Super Bowl. I mean, quarterback rating of 22.6, two interceptions. Think about the Jets game where he threw for 100 just recently. 133 yards. I mean, that was nothing, but he made the big passes at the end to run out the clock, so that was the big part. People thought about that. But I don't know. And then even the game winner for Pittsburgh when Santonio Holmes made that great catch, and it was a great pass, I'll give you that, but it was even a greater catch. So he's capable of doing it, and I understand it, but I think Big Ben sometimes gets too much of the credit. I think that defense deserves a lot of credit for the winning that the Steelers have done as well.
Interesting perspective. And I'll agree with you and kind of the Aaron Rodgers point. One of the things that people don't realize about Aaron Rodgers is what an athlete he is. And when you kind of combine that with the cerebral understanding of the game, the accuracy, the poise, you know, you have what amounts to a pretty darn great quarterback. With Ben, I think he thrives when the play breaks down because he's not the greatest at reading coverage. He holds the ball very long. So when things break down, he's really at his best. You know, and that's the situations you find yourself in at the end of games, which he happens to have the poise to come through after shrugging off three or four D linemen or rushers. So, you know, it depends on what you want in your quarterback, different styles. I'm going with Aaron Rodgers because I'm an Eagles fan, and if the Packers win, that legitimizes my Eagles, and I can say that we got beat by the Super Bowl champion as opposed to, so, you know.
You can be in denial all you want. That ain't got nothing to do with the Eagles. They lost. End of story. Stop it. And you know what? I want to say this one other thing about the Brett Favre thing because that was part of the other question. And you know, Skip's contention is that the Aaron Rodgers love, all the Aaron Rodgers love stems from the hate for Brett Favre. And so they just want Aaron Rodgers to win because this way they could kind of discredit Brett Favre and move past him. And there might be some people out there like that who just hate Brett Favre, and I understand it, but I don't think that has to do with anything with people liking Aaron Rodgers' game. And if he's able to win a Super Bowl in just his third year as a starter, and you think Brett Favre was in Green Bay for 16 years and they won one Super Bowl, and the one Super Bowl, if it wasn't for Desmond Howard, who ran back one and took a kickoff and a punt back for touchdowns, they wouldn't have won
Thank
that.
Thank you.
Thank
you.
Sorry, that's
Thank
how they
you for
won that,
that
Super Bowl.
Yeah,
Thank
Jimmy
that.
Tells people that all the time.
You just made my day,
it's true.
Rob. Thank you for saying that. I agree. It's definitely true.
Hey, Rob, this is Akil. I wanted to ask you just one question. What do you think the score is going to be of Sunday's game?
I got 31-21, Green Bay by 10. I know that's a lot. People are like, 10 points? You know, I know we always want to think every game is a three-pointer, but it's not, even in big games. I don't know. I just think last year I picked New Orleans by 2 touchdowns. I was the only one at ESPN to do that. Everybody thought I was crazy. And when, of course, they got the pick at the end to take it to the house, and the final score was 14 points. So I'm just looking at 10 points. I think Aaron Rodgers can make it happen indoors.
Ooh. Well, the Packers are favored at this point by 2, so we're going to see if they can pull it off. Actually, later on in the show, Rob, we got a Hall of Fame Packer coming on, Herb Adderley, cornerback. So,
oh, that's nice.
Yeah, we're going to see what he thinks. So, once again, brother, we thank you again for coming on. You know, you're always welcome back. Anytime you want to talk to us, we're here to listen. So,
all right,
you
know,
we're trying to feel like you. We feel like you part the family now.
Nah, I appreciate you guys having me. And I'll be on First Take on Monday and Tuesday. So me and Skip will be going at it after the Super Bowl. He's picking the Steelers, I think. And so it'll be a good show on Monday. So tune in 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Monday on ESPN2.
All right, we'll be watching.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, thanks, Rob.
All right, guys, thanks.
Everybody.
Thanks, Rob.
He's
all Packers, and that's interesting. So let's just jump right into some more football talk. We already talked about that, but I have some questions about some awards. So here's what I want to know: the defensive rookie of the year, offensive rookie of the year, comeback player of the year, coach of the year. You guys know what I'm looking for. The major awards, and just give me all your picks for each one, and I'm gonna go down the line. So, Dev, you start us off. Who you have for each, award?
All right. For my disappointing team, it's the same as midseason, the Dallas Cowboys. The surprising team of the year, the Kansas City Chiefs. Defensive rookie of the year, Dominican Sue, with a shout out to Devin McCourty and Joe Hayden in the process. Offensive rookie of the year, Sam Bradford. Comeback player of the year, Mike Vick. Coach of the Year, Bill Belichick, which he actually really did win the award, and Ndamukong Suh won the defensive rookie of the year today. The Golden Toe Award, David Akers. Don't ask me why. I just looked up to see which kicker scored the most points, and it was Akers, even though he kicked like a bum at the end of the season. Defensive Player of the Year, Clay Matthews Jr. Can't say he got robbed because it was Troy Polamalu who won. Offensive Player of the Year, Tom Brady. He really won that. And the MVP for me was Tom Brady in a landslide. Wasn't even close. Who's next?
Yo, what about your War Room Sports Told You So Award of the Year?
Oh, yeah, my War Room Sports Told You So Award of the Year is the same as midseason. Redskins, I told you Donovan McNabb was a bum.
Yo, real quick before I go to the next person, I'm just going to give everybody my picks. So my disappointing team of the NFL season, the San Francisco 49ers. Because, I mean, just what the hell. Surprise team of the year, Kansas City Chiefs, just like you said. Defensive rookie of the year, it got to be Sue. Who else could it be? Offensive rookie of the year, it has to be Sam Bradford. Who else could it be? Comeback player of the year. I got a tie between Brandon Lloyd of the Broncos and Mike Williams of Seattle because both of those dudes last year, where were they? Okay. Coach of the year, I got my man Raheem Morris, and a shout out to the imaginary players. I'm taking Raheem Morris because he drinks gin and juice. The Golden Toy of the Year Award for the best kicker, I'm taking Adam Vinatieri just because I don't like kickers and he's the only one I know from all the clutch kicks. Defensive Player of the Year, Troy. You got to be Troy because, listen, when he's out of that Steelers lineup, it's a different team. Offensive Player of the Year, Brady, MVP Brady. And my War Room Sports Told You So Award, I got to give to Brett Favre because I told y'all he was atrocious. He was a bum. And he's the most overrated player in the history of sports, and he just went out and proved it for me. Now, with that being said, TJ, give me your award.
All right, let me start. A lot of my stuff is similar to you guys, especially Dev. All right, my disappointing team is the 49ers, just like you, Jim. My surprise team, honestly, was the Falcons because they kind of surprised me in the regular season, even though they were really a trash team and frauds. My defensive rookie of the year is Ndama Kung Su. My offensive rookie of the year is Sam Bradford. My comeback player of the year is Michael Vick. My coach of the year is Belichick. My golden toe is Adam Vinatieri. 93% field goal percentage is 93% made and 90% between the range of 40 to 49. Golden toe. Oh, defensive player of the year is Clay Matthews. He's a beast. My offensive player of the year is Uggs Brady, playing with bus pass takers and train engineers. And then my MVP is Uggs Brady for the same reason. I think he ran away with it. Told You So Award, piggybacking off Jimmy Paul, Brett Favre. I kind of like earlier in the season I did a PTR saying I don't think this is the year for him. I need him to sit it down, and he proved me to be right. I told you.
All right, Dr. Bay, what you got on these awards, Dr. Bayon?
All right, here we go. Real quick, disappointing. My Cowboys, surprise team, Kansas City Chiefs. Defensive Rookie of the Year, Dominican Sue. Offensive Rookie of the Year, Sam Bradford. Comeback Player of the Year, Michael Vick. Coach of the Year, Raheem Morris. I mean, he got the Buccaneers of 10 wins. Golden Toe. You know what? I went with a punter because I'm tired of kickers always winning. Field goal kickers winning the Golden Toe Award. So I went with Matt McBryer.
Are punters eligible for that? Are punters eligible for that?
They are in the war room.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, it's all kickers. So we have the highest. Yeah, he had the highest net average of all punters. And defensive player of the year, Clay Matthews. Offensive player of the year, Tom Brady, MVP Brady. And the Told You So Award from War Room Sports. The whole McNabb and Campbell free agent signings. I think we said, some of us said, well, myself said that Campbell would do well in Oakland and get them to probably 8 wins, which they did. And McNabb will probably improve the Redskins maybe by a couple of wins, but they only won 4 games last year. They won 6 games this year. He had a 77 rating, and he played 13 games before he lost his spot. So,
and he didn't make it to week 14. Crump.
Hot Block Commander, what's poppin'?
Yeah. Ndama Kung Su is quite possibly the best D lineman in the history of the universe. Nah, I can't do that. Reggie White.
Reggie White. My bad, Reggie. I'm disrespectful. But yeah, and Dominican Sue is is definitely defensive rookie of the year. No questions. Shout out to Devin McCourty with all the picks. Shout out to Joe Hayden because we, you know, he's from around the way down here, and shout out to him. Offensive rookie of the year. Yeah, I was going to say something else. Offensive rookie of the year. Yo, how can you go other than Sam Bradford? Like the poise that he demonstrated and Lee, I mean, the only other option may be LeGarrette Blount, but I'm going with Sam Bradford, maybe also Marcus Pouncey or whatever, the center. Comeback player of the year is definitely, it's kind of a tie for me. I'm going to tie it up with Mike Vick and Brandon Lloyd, and here's why I say that. Mike Vick came back last year. I mean, I know he didn't do much, but he came back last year. He put up the stats this year. But Brandon Lloyd, I've been telling people for half a decade that Brandon Lloyd is a monster, looking like a fool. And finally, this dude shows what his career could have been had he been doing this 5 years ago. MVP, Thomas Brady. I mean, it ain't no question. It ain't no question. We don't got to talk about it. Arian Foster, runner-up. Jamal Charles, runner-up. Peyton, the great Manning, always a runner-up. Defensive player of the year, I'm going to surprise y'all. I'm going to go with Julius Peppers. And here's why I say that. Julius Peppers made an entire defensive unit better than they were. They were triple-teaming him the entire year, and he still ended up with 8 sacks and 2 picks. Troy has the benefit of a great unit, although he is probably the second best safety in the world right now. Clay Matthews also has the benefit of a great unit. So, you know, Clay Matthews is the man. Shout out to him. Offensive player of the year, I'm going Jamal Charles with Michael Vick as my runner-up. My all-pro, real quick, Tom Brady, the QB, Jamal Charles, the running back, Ovi Mugaheli, the ATL dude, the Falcon at fullback, Roddy White, Brandon Lloyd at receiver.
Are you giving an all-pro team?
Yeah. My defensive end is Peppers and Freeney.
Wow.
My tackles are Nada and Wilfork. My linebackers, Matthews, Harrison, Patrick Willis, Ray Lewis. My corners is Santi Samuel and Asamoah out in Oakland. My safety is Ed Reed.
Yo, let's go to the next question, yo, because he is tripping, yo.
Supposed to the all-pro team.
Yo, we got no all-pro team. Yo, ho, everybody ask you that.
My kicker returner, Brad Smith, and my punt returner, Devin Hester. Shout out.
I got one question. Fun's on hold with all that. Yo, who wins your Told You So award?
Come on, man.
Yeah,
y'all don't want me to really repeat this, do y'all? The same thing everybody else said. I told you, mother. Donovan McNabb is a bum, a complete bum. Y'all have been fooled. Y'all sold y'all souls to sit on the couch and watch this man smile at losses. Yo, come on, man. I told y'all for years.
Yo, all right. I figured you would say that. Yo, you tripping right now, fam. And by the way, yo, I agree with you with Brandon Lloyd, but also Mike Williams was a 300-pound security guard last year.
Jimmy, yeah. my surprise team is the Seattle Sea Chickens. How y'all gonna go to the playoffs and then win the game? Win a game with a losing record? That's my surprise.
All right, real quick though, I want to get y'all guys' opinion on this whole Twitter beef between Aaron Rodgers and Nick Barnett. Did you guys hear about this?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, man.
Hey, Dev, what's your opinion on this whole thing?
Yeah, I told y'all numerous shows, including last week, keep these monkeys off Twitter. for everybody who doesn't know what the beef is about, of course, last week the Packers, Barnett and Jermichael Finley and a few other guys were upset because they were coming down to the Super Bowl on Thursday, but they were supposed to take the team picture on Tuesday. So they were all up in arms about that. So Aaron Rodgers supposedly went to the coach and asked the coach, you know, these guys should be in it. They're part of the team, blah, blah, blah. But then What did he say on Twitter that was slick to Barnett, and Barnett got a little upset about it?
Yo,
he
said basically
the fact that these guys don't. Oh, go ahead, Jim. Go ahead.
Oh, he said because they didn't work out in Green Bay while they were hurt. So Nick Barnett
took
exception to that.
Right.
So they had a little Twitter. Whoa, stop beefing over Twitter. And now you got teammates beefing over Twitter. Seriously. They're going to be upset when the NFL finds a way to mandate them, you know, and stop them from actually using Twitter. Then they're going to be all up in arms. So stop acting like jackasses on Twitter.
Don't give monkeys computers.
Exactly. But my thing is, just like Deb said, like the NFL is going to come up with some creative way to impose a ban on social media. But my point is, what I don't like about it is, just like Deb said, these two dudes are in the same locker room. How are y'all beefing on Twitter and y'all play on the same team? Like, y'all say to a man, this, that, and the third. Well, to a man, settle your issues in the locker room somewhere in close quarters. Don't do it on Twitter. That's just, like, that's foolish. I mean, all of us have been saying, like, yo, stop putting so much stuff on Twitter. Like, all these knee-jerk reactions, and you start writing, you can't really remove it. It's out there. Once it's out there, even if you remove it, it's still out there. It's still footprints. Right. As they say in the IT world, you still left footprints by actually putting it out there, even if you remove it.
Yeah, because even when you delete it, BJ, somebody going to tell somebody that you wrote it.
Exactly.
And then it's going
to
be on ESPN.
They whack, yo. I'm about to start me a beef on LinkedIn. I'll give me somebody to beef with on LinkedIn, yo.
We need to – never mind. I'm about to try to put a business idea out there. We'll talk about that in our next meeting, but go ahead.
Yo, and another beef going on is – Big Ben, a.k.a. Don't Say Nothing, Just Give It Here, beefing with Terry Bradshaw, but they supposedly squashed their beef. So what you guys think about that?
Yeah, he always had it out for Big Ben. I think he was a little jealous because he was moving towards his Super Bowl mark. You know, Terry Bradshaw, he wants to be known as the greatest quarterback ever in Pittsburgh, but they made nice. He gave him a 25-minute interview, and now they all buddy-buddy.
Terry Bradshaw is sensitive about being overrated. three all pros in 14 years as D.
Four Super Bowls.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't really have anything new. I think Terry is a little bit jealous, and you know,
Robert
they need to watch that too. Terry Bradshaw,
even before this summer with the whole taking it in the club, Bradshaw was already really critical about.
Yeah, he was.
You
hate
him. Yo, he killed him with it, even from the motorcycle accident. I remember one time on Fox.
Yeah, he was killing me on them bikes.
For like,
he was
went in on for like 20 minutes. I'm like, damn. So if I'm Roethlisberger, I'm like, yo, he too old for me to be beefing with. He out of my beef age range. Like, I ain't beefing with nobody that's old enough to be my pop, at least not publicly. You know what I mean?
Yo, my thing is, good thing he don't have no He don't have no Twitter because he might have been going at him his whole time for the last couple of years. Yo, that's crazy, yo. But, yeah, so all this Twitter beef, you got teammates and, you know, all this beef. And the thing is, the game is coming up this week, and all we hear about is nonsense. Did you guys hear anything about, like, Media Day and some of the nonsense they were asking the players?
Yo, Media Day is silly, man. Like, I heard them asking Greg Jennings which player – could make the best NFL quarterback. I mean, they were asking him what NBA player could be the best NFL quarterback or something like that. And he chose Chris Paul, but I just didn't understand the line of questioning. Like, you get like 2 hours to say a bunch of nothing. So.
Understand that this is why the War Room will win, because we got cats at Media Day asking players nothing.
Yeah. All right, well, look, we're going to get into this chat because we have our special guest waiting on the line. So if you guys didn't know, our guest was born and bred in our hometown of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where he earned all-city honors in three different sports. He went on to shine as a running back / receiver at Michigan State University. He was drafted 12th overall in 1961 by the great Vince Lombardi in the Green Bay Packers, where he was switched to cornerback due to a backfield crowded with legends and an injured teammate. The rest, my friends, was history. When asked what he admired about Herb, Hall of Fame cornerback Mel Renfro replied,
Rodgers play, and I kind of tried to think like him and get my own interceptions. When I saw him on film, the thing I noticed about Herb was his ability to take advantage of a quarterback's weakness.
As a matter of fact, he took advantage of quarterback's weaknesses for 12 years to the tune of 48 interceptions, 7 touchdowns, 5 Pro Bowls, 7 All-Pro teams, 6 NFL championships, including 3 Super Bowls, and an induction into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. When asked to describe him, Mel Renfro said,
"They call him shutdown quarterbacks these days. Herb was that kind of guy."
All right. But I know y'all are tired of me talking, so without further ado, we'd like to welcome into the war room for the very first time, Mr. Herb Adderley. Hey, Herb, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Thank you very much. Yes, sir, I'm here.
No problem. This is Devin. How you doing?
Okay, Devin, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. We're glad that we got you on tonight. We got the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl this Sunday. We're going to see what they can do. So, Akil, you're going to take it away?
Yes, sir. Hey, Herb, glad to have you on the show. Shout out to the Livingston and Adderley family and Kai Adderley, Philly track legend, for making this happen. Now, you hold several distinctions for being the first or only player to do certain things in the NFL. You also hold several distinctions for being the first or only player to do certain things out of the great athletes from Philly. Now, can you name some of those things for our audience?
Oh, okay. Hey, first of all, thank you guys for having me on, and thanks to my nephew, Kai. And I appreciate it. I don't usually do shows, number one, and I'm delighted to do this with you guys, and hopefully it helped to get some ratings or whatever you're trying to do. Oh. And I noticed the introduction being from Philly. Yep, Philly's my hometown, and I attended Northeast High School, the old Northeast, at 8th and Lehigh. And Central High School was the other all-boys high school, and they were a competitive school. Northeast was all boys, Central was all boys. The only thing that Central beat us in was intelligence. They had smarter guys. Yeah, but anyway, getting back to your question, you want to know the first things that happened to me, like I was the first African-American drafted by Vince Lombardi, the great Vince Lombardi, and the Green Bay Packers in 1961.
Wow.
And the executive board said to Lombardi after he drafted me, he said, "Why are you drafting a black player number one? Because you can wait until the fourth or fifth round to get him." So Lombardi's answer to the executive committee was, "I'm not drafting color. I'm drafting athletes and football players. And stay the hell out of it." And that settled that right then, you know. Then a couple of years later, he drafted another African-American, Big Dave Robinson from Penn State, number one. So, and Big Dave should be in the Hall of Fame because he was one of the greatest linebackers to ever play in the NFL. That was the first thing, our first draft choice. And I was also the first black player that played for Lombardi to be enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And that was in 1980. And I'd also like to say there are five of us on defense that's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Ray Nitschke was the first guy. I was the second. Willie Davis was the third. The great Willie Woods, free safety, was the fourth. And a guy by the name of Henry Jordan, the tackle, was the fifth. And we also had five guys on offense that made the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I'm saying this because I played among some great players. And making the Pro Football Hall of Fame was a highlight. But there were some guys on my team who were MVPs in the league, MVPs in the Super Bowl. And I never got one vote for, you know, MVP in the league or the Super Bowl. But I'm talking about Bart Starr, quarterback, Paul Hornung, Jimmy Taylor, the two running backs, and Forrest Gregg. He's a tackle, and Lombardi said that Forrest Gregg was the greatest player that he ever coached. And also we had a center by the name of Jim Ringo, and he's in the Hall of Fame. So we had 10 of us in the Hall of Fame off of those great Lombardi teams. So I feel very privileged to have been one of those, selected. I was the first.
Wow.
Hey, look, you guys can cut in anytime you want to if you have any questions.
Mr. Adderley, I do Mr. Adley, I do have a question for you. This is Jimmy, by the way. I have a question because I know that you played for both Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry. You're one of the first guys to do that. And I've heard you sometimes give a lot of high praise for Vince Lombardi, and not only you but a lot of your teammates, they give Lombardi the top praise. But what were the differences between the two legendary coaches, between Landry and Vince Lombardi?
Well, it's like the weather in Hawaii and the weather in Dallas right now. And, you know, and it's different like night and day, you know. They were two different men, obviously, and had two different philosophies, you know, two different ways to treat people. Lombardi was well-respected by all of his players because he treated us all the same. You know, he recognized his greatest asset was recognizing individual differences in people. In other words, he didn't treat everybody the same. He didn't treat all the black players the same or all the white guys the same. He took time to sit down with us and talk and find out, you know, different things about us, and he treated us as such. He was a humanitarian, psychologist, psychiatrist, teacher, coach, fatherly, anything we needed. You know, he was right there for us to help us, and his level for racism, discrimination was zero. He wouldn't tolerate it because he felt as though he was discriminated against himself because he was an Italian and he couldn't get a head coaching job in the NFL because of that. You know, at that time they were all Jewish owners and they wanted, you know, Jewish coaches, you know, to coach in the NFL. So Lombardi ended up in Green Bay because Green Bay was the worst team in the NFL at the time. I think they were like 1-12 or whatever it was. They only won one game the year before he went there.
Wow, he turned it around.
They said, okay, we'll send him to Siberia. That's what they called Green Bay at the time. You know. So they sent Lombardi up there. And a lot of the great players that I mentioned were already there in Green Bay, but they only had one black player, a guy by the name Borden. There was only one black player in Green Bay at that time. And most of those guys were there, but they were playing out of position or they wasn't being motivated enough, you know, to play up to their full potential. And we had, you know, the freedom on the field to make adjustments or to make changes. We could talk to Lombardi on the sideline and about different things. And in Dallas, when I was traded there, the first thing I noticed was the cliques that was going on. And a lot of racism was going on, not only on the team, but in the city also, because the black players couldn't live, you know, any place they wanted to. They had to, you know, live in South Dallas or Eau Claire, somewhere a long ways from where the practice facilities were. And, you know, a lot of that was going on. And then amongst the players, there was, you know, a lot of racism, you know, right on the team there. And it was unbelievable for me because I was in my 10th year. And, you know, 5 championships, wow. 2 Super Bowls, and we had beaten Dallas, which is our arch rival, you know, beating them twice to get to Super Bowl I and Super Bowl II. And we just, you know, it was kind of like a hate that the Cowboys had for us and also we had for them. So it was a very unusual, you know, situation for me and a shock, a culture shock for me to end up in Dallas, you know.
Right.
It was 13 below zero in Green Bay and 105 in the shade in Dallas. That's a big difference.
Mr. Adderley, this is Paul. Thanks again for coming on with us. I have a quick question for you. The NFL.com and NFL Network recently did a top 100 list, and they had you as the 64th greatest player of all time. Now, what would you say are some of your attributes that made you such a great player?
The first thing I have to say is, you know, thank God for the God-gifted talent and ability that I realized at a young age, you know, because without God in my life, I wouldn't be talking to you guys now. So, you know, it's been very, very, very helpful. Yeah. That's number one. You know, God has always been number one in my life, and that's where I give the credit to. And also, the people who helped me as I was coming along noticed that I had athletic ability, too. And I developed all my athletic skills at the Wissahickon Boys Club in the Germantown section of Philly.
That's right around the corner from where I grew up. Sorry to cut you off.
Well, that's okay. You can cut off anytime you want. Yeah, it's located at Pulaski Avenue and Coulter Street.
And Coulter Street,
yeah. And I lived on Newhall Street, right across the street from the Boys Club, see? So Enon Baptist Church, the Wissahickon Boys Club, and the playground down at Pulaski and Penn were the three places right there. I was either in church or the Wissahickon Boys Club or the playground or in school. During my growing up days, you know, I mean, that's where I was, and the people, and I played everything except football. You know, we played everything in the Wissahickon Boys Club, and that's where I developed all my athletic skills to go on and, you know, do what I had to do.
Okay.
And also, you know, staying in physical shape, you know, I stayed in shape all year round. You know, I ran 5 miles in the morning, 5 miles in the evening. And physical condition was one of the things, that was one of the things that helped me to play 12 years in the NFL, just being in physical condition.
And I can't
run 5 miles
in the next 3 days.
Exactly. I run 5 miles now. I need to rest for about a week.
different time and different breed. Mr. Adderley, this is Bradley, and man, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to join us in the War Room. It means a lot to us. It means a lot to our fans, and to have a trailblazer such as yourself grace us with this time, we just appreciate you. Being considered one of the greats, you're welcome. You're welcome. Being considered one of the greats, who are some of the cornerbacks that you respect that came after you? You know, the Mel Blunts, the Deons, the Darryl Greens, the Rod Woodsons. And then also I wanted to ask you, are any of these guys in today's game that you think are actually great?
Well, you mentioned that when I was playing, you know, the greatest cornerback to ever play the game was a guy named Dick Nitrain Lane.
Yes,
he was number 81. You know, this guy was, without a doubt, he would have been All-Pro Hall of Famer. And he could have played any one of the four positions in the secondary, strong safety, weak safety, right corner, left corner. And Lombardi told me, he said, Nitrain Lane is the greatest cornerback that I've ever seen. And that's right away. I said, well, if I'm going to play that position, this is who I want to pattern my game after. So I watched films of him, and we played against Detroit Lions, and I watched him on the field and watched films of him, and I just, you know, patterned my game after him. And Nitrain Lane was the first cornerback to be enshrined in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I was the second. So, you know, that meant something to me. So he was the greatest cornerback. But during my time, they were a guy named Jimmy Johnson, played for the 49ers. He's in the Hall of Fame. My roommate in Dallas was Mel Renfro. I heard him say some things. But Mel Renfro was one of the greatest athletes I'd ever seen. And Mel was playing out of position. Mel should have been a free safety. He would have been the greatest free safety to ever play the game because of his speed and his athletic ability. But Tom Landry was too stubborn to play him at that position, so he put him out on the corner. Another guy by the name of Lem Barney. Lem Barney played for Detroit. He's a Hall of Famer. Yeah, he's a great player. Mel Blunt, he's another one. Mike Haynes. You mentioned Rod Woodson. Deion Sanders, we can't leave him out. He didn't hit anybody, but he could cover.
Speaking of Deion, though, didn't you return punts and kicks as well?
Yeah, I returned kickoffs.
Okay.
And Champ Bailey, I want to mention Champ Bailey because he's one of the best, and he's destined for the Hall of Fame without a doubt. And like you mentioned, Darryl Green, you know, that's just a few guys that I can think of right off the top of my head.
Okay, Brad, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, you mentioned the difference between the skill sets and athleticism playing at the two positions in the NFL. What are some of the differences that you see between a corner and a safety, especially during your time?
Oh, it's the same now. You know, cornerbacks are the best athletes on the field, defense, to put it that way. And cornerbacks can play safety. They can go inside and cover and play inside. And if they're fifth back, it's usually a cornerback that comes out when they use five defensive backs now. But safeties, strong and weak safeties, cannot play the corner. If so, they would be out on the corner. you know, because every team needs good corners, because if you can shut down the flanks, you got a chance to win every game. And the guy I played with, Bob Jeter in Green Bay and Mel Renfro in Dallas, well, I told him, I said, look, we shut the corners down, shut these flanks down on the pass and the run, we got a shot at winning every game. So the cornerbacks are, without a doubt, the best athletes. And myself, I think I was playing out of position, too. I think my natural position on defense would have been free safety. And I say that because of my speed to get from sideline to sideline to help out the cornerbacks on the deep stuff, and also to get up there and lay some wood on those guys, running backs that's coming up through the middle. You know. So anyway, Lombardi, I told Lombardi that, and he said, no. He said, if we put you at free safety, that means that Willie Wood wouldn't have a job. So we want you out on the corner and just stay out there. So, you know, I ended up playing out on the corner.
Cool.
So, but that's the biggest difference.
I'm sorry. This is Devin again. I just wanted to ask you about some stuff you did that was really important after you retired. Now, I know back in 2007, you filed a lawsuit against the NFL Players Association on behalf of over 2,000 retired players contending that the union failed to actively pursue marketing deals on you guys' behalf with video games, trading cards, et cetera. How was that lawsuit resolved, and were you happy with the resolution?
Well, let me just say this. Gene Upshaw was the president of the NFLPA, and Gene Upshaw also played back in the day because he played in Super Bowl II, and we beat the Raiders 33-14. And, you know, like, he's one of us. So when Gene Upshaw got to be the president of the NFLPA, he changed our union to an association, which it is now. It's the National Football League Players Association. Back in the day when we first started, it was the Players Union. So when Upshaw got in there and he saw all the money and everything involved, and then greed set in for him. So in my opinion, he hijacked our union, changed it to an association, and decided he was going to go along with all the active players because he said that's who was paying him his money. And he turned against all the retired guys, except for the guys he handpicked and chose. There's some of those guys that he handpicked and chose were the high-profile guys like Mike Dicker, Joe Montana, high-profile guys on TV, Dan Dierdorf, you name these guys, and he sent everything their way as far as endorsements. The rest of us, including some of his teammates, he said, you know, like, the hell with these guys. You know, they finished, they're over, referred to us as dogs and unmarketable, useless. I'm talking about the great Johnny Unitas, and, you know, some of these guys were turned down for disability and everything else. And they could have lived longer and more productive lives if they had gotten a disability attention and good pensions, and Upshaw blocked all of this. Now, I got involved with the lawsuit because I had signed an agreement with the NFLPA, and they refused to pay me because I was griping about the lousy pension. And not only me, but a lot of guys. There's 200 guys, including myself, 50 Hall of Famers that get less than $200 a month on a pension.
Wow.
Because Upshaw went in, and when he changed it over to association from a union, well, it gave him the authority to change the bylaws and do whatever he wanted to.
Wow.
So he changed everything around to freeze out the retired guys. So I said, well, you know, I'm going to get involved with this lawsuit and sue him and the NFLPA for using our names, likeness, image, which they're still doing, because every time you see these old films, NFL films during this Super Bowl week, and they show the old Packers and stuff, well, you know, somebody's making money from that, but they still don't give us a dime, and their lawsuit's going on now.
Even on the video games, they have, like, legendary teams that you can pick. So,
all that stuff
is
EA Sports. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2007, February 14th, we filed a lawsuit in New York, Manhattan, downtown, against the NFLPA. And his lawsuit went on for about, I don't know, almost 3 years and thousands of documents. And I was the class rep for 2,074 guys. 12 guys opted out. The 12 guys that opted out was Gene Upshaw's cronies. They were being paid by Gene Upshaw for endorsements, so they opted out and said, look, we can't sue the NFLPA, and we're making thousands of dollars. So they opted out. So it ended up being 2,062 guys that I represented in this lawsuit. And after 2.5 years of documents back and forth, the trial started in San Francisco. 2009, and it lasted about three and a half weeks. It was a federal judge, Judge Alsop, and then it was a federal jury, 8 women and 2 men. And we heard all of, you know, the documents and why we shouldn't get paid by this. They had 12 lawyers in the room the whole time. I'm talking about the NFLPA. And right. They referred to us as dogs, said we were unmarketable, that we was useless. And they were trying to convince the jury of all this. The jury sitting there listening, I'm sitting there, I'm saying, my goodness. And plus they had some guys that played during my time that came up and testified against us and saying, wow. you know, they're right. You know, we're not nothing. And I'm saying, how could they do this? So anyway, the jury didn't go for it. And they ended up awarding us $28.1 million.
Wow.
And we made the settlement June the 5th, 2009, in D.C. for $26,250,000. And what happened was that money was distributed and divided among the 2,062 players. So all of us got a piece of money out of the whole thing. And that was the first time. It was a historic lawsuit. It was the first time ever that anyone who filed a lawsuit against them and won the case.
That was a good deal.
Wow.
Good.
Wow. Yeah. Herb, this is Akil again. I wanted to just mention a couple of things for the audience out there that, you know, you only played 2 years of football at Michigan State. I mean, in high school,
yeah.
Northeast. And then that, and you walked on to Michigan State as a running back.
Yeah.
And also, you were the first Hall of Famer to come from the Philadelphia Public League. And you were the first one to run an interception back for a touchdown, 60-yard interception. Super Bowl too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I went to Brooklyn.
Go ahead. No. And then I want to mention that you jumped center playing with Sonny Hill at Northeast. Y'all lost one game and you jumped center against Will Chamberlain when y'all lost to Overbrook.
Well, to still.
Yeah, well, and, you know, basketball was and still is my favorite sport. And when I left Roosevelt Junior High School, Washington Lane and Musgrave, I went to Germantown High School, and I went out for the basketball team, and they said because they had the A and B back then where you graduated midterm. So basketball season was already going on. So when I went out for the team, the coach there told me that it was too late, that they already had the team and everything. So the following week, I transferred to Northeast at 8th and Lehigh. And Guy Rogers, great player. He was my idol. And when I ended up at Northeast, it was still midterm. I went out for the team. I had no problem. I ended up starting. And like I said, yeah, Sonny Hill was on that team. A guy named T. Parham, Bobby Young, Milt Davis, just to name a few of those guys. But anyway, ended up playing against Wilt. This was 1955. Our team went 11-1, and the game we lost was to Overbrook and Wilt. They were 12-0 that year. And I remember jumping center against Wilt because I was the center on the team and also brought the ball up court like a point guard. And Wilt scored 48 points against us. They beat us by like 10 points because we had a really good team, and so did they. But Wilt was the factor. And there was a guy named Bill Shefsky. Bill Shefsky was the beat writer for the Philadelphia Daily News for high school sports. And on the back page, it had Adderley holds Wilt to 48. Coach Ike Willie was really upset about that because he thought it was kind of embarrassing for me and everybody else. So when he finally saw Bill Shefsky, you know, he said, why would you want to put something like this and blast it on the back page? So Bill Shefsky told our coach, Ike Willie, he said, hey, Wilt scored 90 points against Roxbury the week before, so Herb holding 48 is a hell of a thing.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, he scored 90 points. Yeah, go ahead.
Mr. Adderley, yeah, one of our listeners, actually my chat room, had a question for you, and they want to know, what do you think of them possibly going to an 18-game schedule and also all the concussions that are going on in the game?
Well, that's one of the holdups right now as far as the CBA, the collective bargaining agreement, that if it is not signed by March the 3rd, that means it's going to be a lockout and they might be going on strike. But one of the things is the 18-game schedule that the players don't want to do it because of the injury factor. You know,
yeah,
the more
yeah.
games you play and the later the season, you know, guys are hurting You know, you can't play in the NFL and not hurt during the season and after the season, just like the guys playing in the Super Bowl now. Some of those guys are banged up and stuff from the season. And to extend it for two more games, you know, it just means that there's more chance of injury. And that's what the guys are trying to fight against, them not extending this 18-game schedule. That's one of the main things. Yeah. So what was the other question?
With all the concussions and all the rule changes, what's your opinion on the concussions going on these days?
Oh, yeah, well, look, the concussions didn't just start. I had three that I remember, you know, back in the day. And Andre Waters, who played for the Eagles, Andre said he had 16 or 17 that he remembered. You know, and then he ended up putting a gun to his head because he couldn't deal with it any longer. You know, back in the day,
That's actually something that we talked about in the war room some weeks back, and we all kind of agreed on that. Like, the concussions had to be there before. The only reason that, you know, they're making a big deal out of it now because they're changing rules because of it, and, you know, players can't just come back into the game. You know, you have to do the concussion test, and you might miss a week or two. So, yeah, just as we thought, you know, we know you guys were getting concussions just as well, but now they're just, you know, publicizing it a little bit more.
Yeah, well, the thing is that the retired guys that played back in the day and during the 70s and 80s, some of those guys are suffering from dementia, including my roommate, Willie Wood, and a lot of that came from their headshots and concussions. And they were raising so much cane about this and not getting disability and to help out the guys with the dementia, it came to the attention of the active players. You know, there's a great tight end by the name of John Mackey who played for the Baltimore Colts. And John Mackey was the first one to publicly come out, and his wife, Sylvia, that he had dementia and because of blows to the head. And Upshaw and the NFL Players Association turned his back on him and Johnny Unitas, who had physical problems. And they finally got what they call the 88 plan. That was John Mackey's number. So the 88 plan is was for guys who had dementia that was in a facility. They get $88,000. If they stay at home, they get $55,000. But they did pass the law that they're going to give these guys some money who suffer from dementia. Now, Gene Upshaw tried to take the credit for that, but he was the one that was turning it down. So Sylvia Mackey, John Mackey's wife, wrote a letter to Tagliabue, who was the commissioner at the time, and Tagliabue was the one who stepped in and did something about it. So, and now, a lot of these concussions that's happening now is because of head-to-head shots, these helmet-to-helmet shots you see now.
Yep.
I have never had a shot like that put on me. I've never hit anybody like that. I've never seen anybody back in the day, you know.
They can't tackle these days. They're just looking for the kill shot.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. Well, we were taught to use the shoulders. That's what the shoulder pads are for, to hit with your head up, eyes open, and use the shoulder. And we never went in and had a headshot helmet to helmet on anybody. You know, I never seen that. So now, you know, guys are, you know, taking shots like that, and finally they start to get fined, and it's kind of cut back on it a little bit. But I don't know. I was afraid of hurting myself, you know, doing something like that, going in with the headshots. I've seen guys, you know, get knocked themselves out going in there, delivering a blow on another guy.
Yeah.
So,
wow. Well, speaking of the present, the hits now, we have a big game coming up with one of the teams that you played for, the Green Bay Packers. So what's your prediction? Let's ask a score prediction for this weekend's Super Bowl.
Hey, it's hard to predict the score. I'm a Green Bay Packer diehard. My allegiance is with the Green Bay Packers, and I'm from Philly. And if you're from Philly, you got to hate the Boston Celtics and the Dallas Cowboys. So,
even though you play for them?
That doesn't matter.
You could say that again. You could say that again, Brother Herb. You got to hate the Cowboys.
I have a Super Bowl ring from the Cowboys. I'm the only one to have a Super Bowl ring from the Cowboys and never wore it.
So what's your prediction for the game this week?
Well, you know, the game to me is like these two teams are equally on offense, defense. You know, they got special teams. You know, they got the safety from Pittsburgh is the MVP. Last year was the linebacker from the Packers. Matthews, MVP, and then the year before that it was Woodson. So they had some great players on both sides of the ball. Now, in my opinion, defense is the name of the game. If your defense can shut down the other team, that means it's going to be a 0-0 tie or you're going to win the ball game. That's the way it is. Now, both teams, the number one and number two in defense, right? So you can, and if you can't shut down the run and stop the run and run the ball in the NFL, you can't win. And both teams have a good running game. The Packers got this guy Sparks that came from nowhere to help their running game. Mendenhall with the Steelers, they got a good running game. Both teams have good quarterbacks, Rodgers and Roethlisberger. And I give the nod to Pittsburgh because Roethlisberger has played in, he has two Super Bowl rings, so he knows what it's like to be there in a big game where Rodgers doesn't have that experience. But they're both a big, strong quarterbacks. They can throw the ball in the pocket. They can get out of the pocket, move around, and they can make things happen. Both teams have excellent wide receivers and tight ends. And it looks to me like everything is equal. So this is what it's going to come down to. Two things. The team that plays the best defense and the team that makes the least amount of mistakes is going to win the ball game. Is that simple?
We know who you're rooting for. They got to add to your Packer history. But, Mr. Adley, we are honored that you came on with us. We would love to do it again sometime. So, you know, anytime you feel like talking, we'll be here to listen. We can do this all day. But you guys want to say anything before we let them go?
Hey, listen, thank you. You guys know how to reach me, so anytime you want me to come on and say a few words, I'll be happy to. And I told Akil that my favorite sport is basketball. We can talk some basketball anytime you want. Cause I love
We got to get you on for some hoops then. We got to get you on
for some hoops. We'll be in touch, and we'll get you back on, and we can talk some football. We can talk some hoops. But thanks again for coming on. We really appreciate it.
Okay. All
right, Herb Adderley, everybody.
All right.
And the great Herb Adderley.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was great.
Yeah. Another thing that we forgot to mention is that he played in four of the first six Super Bowls. That's crazy. And already had, five NFL championships by that time before the Super Bowl even started.
Wow.
That's crazy. So, Jim, let's get back into this Super Bowl game.
Yeah. I got a question for you guys. And it's funny because I've been talking about this all week to a lot of different people. Speaking of great cornerbacks, Charles Woodson, and when you look at his body of work, his career, do you guys think that he gets the credit he deserves? I mean, he's been putting in work for a long time. I mean, he won the Heisman playing defense. Where did he do that at? So I just want to know what you're thinking about Charles Woodson. Like, do you guys think he actually gets the credit?
Chuck Woodson, man, I think he's one of the top corners of this generation, and I don't think he gets the credit. You know, even though he did win Defensive Player of the Year, which is hard to do at cornerback, and like you said, he won the Heisman in college at cornerback and return man. I don't think he gets the credit from the fans necessarily because, you know, the time that you spend in Oakland, and this is not just for him, this is for most players, you know, the time that's like the pit of unfortunate. So everything you do in Oakland, people seem to forget that you're on the earth.
What's the boy name now?
Nandi Asomugha.
That boy.
He's trying to get out of dodging.
Jimmy, this is a great question because I spent some time looking at the defensive backfield and studying certain positions. I think that as you watch and you examine Chuck Woodson's career, you can see him coming into the league with a lot of hype. He went into the pit of the unfortunate after about two good solid seasons. And then there was like three seasons in Oakland where he just was a non-factor, whether it was due to injury, whether it was due to him losing the love of the game. Then he left Oakland, and he was just like back on the scene again. You know what I'm saying? I think that Chuck is a heck of a player,
of a football player. As an actual corner, I think he gets, technique-wise, he grabs a lot. He definitely grabs a lot in a day and age where that's going to get penalized.
I hope he don't grab too much because my wife got a crush on him, so.
But, I'm gonna say this. So one of the things that makes him great is the fact that as a football player, he's able to play multiple positions. Now he's still listed as a corner in Green Bay, but he didn't play corner this year. He played safety. He played probably 40% out there on the edge and 60% they moving him around in the formation, and that's how he's gonna prolong his career. They're gonna move him back to free safety and let him play out his career there.
Yeah, he was one of the rare shutdown.
Oh, go ahead, mm-hmm. PJ. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, I was going to say he was one of the rare shutdown corners in this modern era of football that is actually also a good tackler and could show and run support, where a lot of the shutdown corners don't do that. They don't give you all that, you know, in one. He's like Brad said, he's a football player, like an athlete, like a straight up and down football player. And I think that's one of his best attributes, being athletic and being strong as well as a good corner. And now, you know, obviously has transitioned over to safety. But yeah, he's really good, man. And now I think with the success of Green Bay, it's helping him get more notoriety. But you know, this he's a very good
football. I don't think Charles Woodson was a shutdown corner most of his career. I've seen him get beat. He's a great player, and his versatility allows him to thrive. There's so many things that he does around the ball. You know, his ability to strip the ball, his ability to capitalize on quarterback's mistakes. I look at him, even though he's a different player, he's more of a bump and run corner. I look at him the same way I look at Asante Samuels. I wouldn't call Asante Samuels a shutdown corner, but I still consider him a very, very good to maybe someday even great corner.
And Charles
Woodson covers better than Asante in terms of covering.
Asante
don't tackle nobody.
Most 215 in the chat room said Charles Woodson was a victim of Al Davis. He was a victim of Bernie, so. So we can move on from that. I think he's really going to play a pivotal part in this game because I think he's been hungry for this for his whole career.
Yeah,
I mean, he's played
in
the Super Bowl before, and they got trashed in Oakland. But
well, let me ask you guys a question that we've asked, you know, our first guest Rob, and that is if you can have one of the quarterbacks, which one would you want for one game to win it? We heard his breakdown of it, but let me ask you guys that same question. Who would you take in terms of a quarterback?
That's difficult.
Yo, I would take, you know what? It's kind of hard because I think it's like for the first three quarters, you'd rather have Aaron Rodgers because he'll probably be more consistent. But then for the fourth quarter, you'd want to have Ben Roethlisberger winning that thing for you in the clutch. So
that's what I'm saying, Kill, because it's difficult because I'm such an Aaron Rodgers stan, like we see some other people are. But it's hard to disrespect Big Ben in big games.
Oh.
I mean, besides the first Super Bowl where he didn't do much, all he does now is make clutch plays at the end of games. With that said, I'm taking Aaron Rodgers.
I can attest Dev has been an Aaron Rodgers stan for years, yo. Anyway, PJ, who you taking?
That's a difficult one, man. I think for one game, I think I would take Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I know Ben is the consummate and ultimate closer, but I think Aaron Rodgers gives me more of a threat at the quarterback position, being able to move, being able to throw, and you know, I just go with Aaron Rodgers, man. I think he's a better quarterback. Yeah.
Hey, PJ, you know what?
I think he's the best quarterback in the NFC. So
yeah,
I mean,
if Jimmy's question was different. If he said one drive, then maybe I'll.
Yeah, one drive, right? Before a game, but one game,
game,
I want Aaron Rodgers because I think he pulls more. He's to me definitely a better quarterback.
For one game, he might blow you out. So it might not come down to the line.
Right.
Well, man. Yo, I'm gonna go a different way just because all you guys have been saying Rodgers anyway. I think I'm just gonna play devil's advocate and say I'll take Ben, just because first of all, Ben doesn't even have this kind of weapons Aaron Rodgers has, but Ben makes plays when they're needed. And also, we all know that when Ben wants something, he takes whatever he wants. So if he wants to get those yards or that touchdown, no pun intended, Ben takes what he wants. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I think I make this
Ben.
You know what I'm saying? Kill, what you saying? You said you take Rodgers too?
I said I take Rodgers for the first three quarters and Ben for the last.
Okay, yeah, Ben for the last. Ben for the last.
Kill,
all right, well, let me
make his own question up.
I want to see what you guys think about this. I really want to see how you guys feel about this.
Hold on, good brother.
Yeah, get
B.
Austin.
Oh, B.
Yeah,
Austin. Who are you taking?
I'm going Aaron Rodgers, and I don't even think it's that close. I disagree with the Ben Roethlisberger and the weapons thing because Mike Wallace is leading the league in big plays. Hines Ward is going to the Hall of Fame. And his tight end, Zach Miller, ain't bad. And Rashad Mendenhall is nice.
Well, first off, did you say Zach Miller?
Mendenhall. You mean Heath Miller?
You mean Heath Miller?
Heath Miller
played for a different team, Chant, and he does lead the league in those big plays. And that's a lot of times because Ben making a play when the play breaks down. Hines Ward is going to the Hall of Fame. But he's been putting in work for his body of work is just so long and extensive, and plus he's probably one of the greatest blocking wide receivers in the history of the game. But at the end of the day, the Packers have the four best receivers in the game. I mean, it's nothing.
What you mean?
Are you saying they don't?
You mean the best tandem?
You
mean the best tandem?
What?
Oh, okay.
I mean the best tandem, not top four. No. I mean as
top four. I think you mean the best tandem.
Yeah, as a core. They have the best receiving core in that game.
Yeah. I don't know if I even agree with that, but I get what you're saying because I'm not really giving Jordy Nelson and James Jones that much props. James Jones got
they
the
put
drop.
In work.
Jordy Nelson puts in work.
Jordy
Nelson puts in work. He's an overachiever, but I would have to do some more thinking on that to come up with the top.
A lot of times
four,
with Jordy Nelson,
say,
though, that's by default.
Well, that PJ got what I was saying. I didn't mean the top four.
I got what you're saying.
The
receiving
tandem,
yeah. The receiving core.
I agree with you saying, too, but I mean, you got to
probably some better cores out there.
Yo, Greg Jennings, a.k.a. Marvin Gaye, because the Bulls look like Marvin Gaye. Yo, he's better than every receiver in the game.
What?
In the Super Bowl?
I'm talking about the Super Bowl game. Oh, I thought you were talking about the National Football. I thought I was about to say, not a game.
I'm talking about the game.
Ain't nobody else playing but two teams, dog. Yo, I got a serious question because I want to see how you guys answer this because I've been debating this my whole life. And this question is this. If you could only have one, which one would you take? Would you rather have a Super Bowl ring or be a Hall of Fame player? You know, some people could do both, but sometimes you can only have one or the other. If you had your choice, would you rather have a Super Bowl ring or be a Hall of Famer? I'm going to go around the room, Dev. What would you rather have?
Me? I would see, this is my theory, especially in football. You know, any 53rd dude, any injured reserve can go along for the ride and get a Super Bowl. So I don't want to be that dude. So going to the Hall of Fame means that, you know, everybody recognized the hard work that I put into the game. They recognized my greatness. I think if you could only have one, I would want to go into the Hall of Fame.
Shout out to Dan Marino. PJ, what would you take?
See, that's hard because what Dev started off with is what makes that a difficult. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
All right,
but
well,
let's rephrase the question. If you think about, say, an IR or a third stringer that played like 10 minutes the whole season, like he can get a Super Bowl because he was just on a Super Bowl team. Now, if you ask me if I was a contributing part of the team, like
all
I
right,
started
yeah.
on,
let's,
on
let's
the team.
Let's make that the question.
Like, if you
want to
clarify it like that, and then, like, I mean, not changing it, but, I mean, if you say it like that, here's the thing. Just like what Dev said, like, as football being the ultimate team sport, and everything you do in football is to get to the ultimate goal, which is the culmination, which is winning a Super Bowl. So postseason, preseason, during the season, everything you do as a player, your workout, everything is to really get to the Super Bowl because that kind of defines your whole mission as a team. And my thing is, if you win a Super Bowl, obviously you can't get the other, which is Hall of Fame, but if you win a Super Bowl, it makes a lot of other things go away. So having a Super Bowl win in your resume, saying you were
ask
contributing
Brett
to the team. What you say?
Yeah,
as Brett Favre.
Said,
yeah, right.
Again,
having a Super Bowl, it kind of puts you in a so to answer the question without taking up too much time, if I can be a contributing player on the team, say a starter. Just say a starter, not necessarily all star, but a starter.
Yeah, let's say a starter. That's
on the team,
to a starter.
I would say Super Bowl. I would say Super Bowl because that's something that you can that's instant gratification for that year, that season versus the Hall of Fame.
Along the lines of what PJ was saying though, since football is the consummate team sport, you need a lot of things to go right for you to do that. So if I'm Jim Kelly, even though we didn't get it them four times, I still, after the fact, want my greatness to be recognized.
But that's always the answer on his career, though. Like, that's a, that's a good point. But that's the answer on your career that he didn't win the Super Bowl. So when you do win the Super Bowl, it's not necessarily that he didn't make the Hall of Fame.
Go ahead. I was saying in the chat room, most 215 said we must didn't listen to Mr. Adderley, because if you win the Super Bowl, you can sell your ring when you get screwed by the Players Association at the play of the game.
I can't sell my Hall of Fame buff.
If we change that question to being a starter, would it change your answer?
To being a starter?
Yeah, being a starter on a Super Bowl team, that you're a contributing factor. Would you rather be a starter on a Super Bowl team or be a Hall of Famer?
I'd probably rather win the Super Bowl as a starter. See, there's different levels to this question. Then you go for as a starter, then as a superstar. even if I don't win, you still know I was there.
You know, like Mike.
Yo, Kill. Hold on, Kill. Kill, what were you going to say about the question?
There you go.
Kill, what were you going to say?
Hello. You play to win the game.
That's it.
Now, hold up. But with that
to get
said,
that money.
If I had to choose between being a Hall of Famer and winning the Super Bowl, like Lawyer Malloy said, Super Bowl rings don't feed my family. If I'm a more dominant player. That means I'm getting a bigger contract. That means I'm getting probably more endorsements. And so, hey, I'd rather have the stats and the money and all of that than the Super Bowl rings as a starter.
I'm shocked at you guys, man. Come on, man.
Hey, Jimmy, he played the soundbite and then went totally in a different direction.
The other way. Exactly. Yo, he played the soundbite. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, I see what Kill at. That's what I'm saying. He said, but. I need that cheat.
Hey, B. Austin, man. What's your thoughts, B. Austin?
Leon needs the Hall of Fame.
What? Yo, what up? So you start his answer off with Leon?
Yo.
Jimmy like, yo, I'm playing here with a bunch of selfish dudes.
I remember that.
So
I know what your answer is.
Choosing Hall of Fame over Super Bowl doesn't mean you don't badly want to win it, but if you ask me.
I know what you're saying. Let me ask you a question. Does that go across all sports or just football? Let's say the NBA. Would you rather be, Patrick Ewing?
Barkley.
Or would you rather be a player that contributed to a championship?
Would you rather be Barkley or
in the league, I'm sitting on the bench, but I'm still collecting a guaranteed check. So I'm getting my cheek.
No, but say you were a star. Say you were like a six man, Brett. Like say you was at least like maybe seven deep. But say you were a six man or
a
star.
Let's say you're Derek Fisher.
Let's keep it in perspective. And I'm gonna hate.
Don't say Derek Fisher,
this,
Brett.
Know,
hate Derek Fisher.
It's gonna pain me to say this. Yo, Kevin Ollie has made eight figures.
Yo,
he ain't going to the hall, and he ain't getting no ring.
Why
you bring up Kevin?
Yo, I'd rather be Dominique Wilkins than Michael Cooper.
You wouldn't want to be Coop, Kel?
I'd rather be Dominique Wilkins. Yeah, I mean, Coop was nice. He was nice, but I'd rather have Wilkins' career than Michael Cooper's career.
I think the real
Kel is back.
Yo,
I'm most shocked to kill out of everybody.
I'd rather be Charles Barkley than Andrew Bynum. Word.
Exactly.
How about Derek Fisher? He contributed.
He had big shots and everything.
I don't want to be.
Nah, I don't want to be.
I'd rather be Trevor Ruffin than Derek Fisher.
All right, man. What's,
come on, man.
Well,
yo, I'm shocked at y'all dudes, man.
We're going to hold our predictions for our Sunday show, right?
Yeah, we're going to hold the predictions for the chef of the Sunday show. This conversation
guess,
is intriguing to me because I'm really shocked at you dudes,
Jimmy,
man.
Jimmy, it's a little different. That's for me, if I'm playing basketball, I can accept being a bum and winning a chip versus football because your financial security is a little bit different in basketball than it is in football.
No, but at the same time in basketball, since there's only five people on the court at one time, you have a bigger say on what goes on each game. So I think you would feel a little bit worse in basketball as a great than not winning a Super Bowl in football as a great player. You know,
shout
I think
to
Charles
LeBron
Barkley,
James.
I think Charles
plus
Barkley feels worse than Dan Marino. Because Chuck, you know, he controls.
Plus, if you consider the position,
more.
There's so many levels.
Yo,
like
I don't know.
Dad.
I don't know.
Say you're
the
position.
Yo,
Jim, say you're a position. Say you're a quarterback, right? So say you're a quarterback versus a outside linebacker. So if you're a quarterback that has won a Super Bowl, right, you don't have to be great. But even like bums like Trent Dilfer that have
Trent
won them.
Trent Dilfer. Trent,
yeah,
dude.
I know you were gonna say. I think you're gonna say that.
Yo.
I'm just saying, like a quarterback that manages
man.
The game, didn't lose the game, but won a Super Bowl, still has
yeah.
like he's a Super Bowl winning quarterback versus like a Super Bowl
no,
winning like
but Dev,
right
Paul,
guard.
But Dev,
you know,
I,
so if you
I,
play
yeah.
quarterback,
I agree with you, PJ. But Dev, I disagree with you that Dan Marino will feel worse because I think because of his position, that puts more pressure on him. Like, yo, if Dan Marino wins a Super Bowl. That changes so many things in terms of the debate about quarterback. There is no debate. But with
Charles
Barkley,
Charles Barkley was in position to score like a third of the team's points every night. Charles Barkley could carry more of the load. Dan Marino,
no, I get
even
that.
A great
and
quarterback. Listen, though, even a great quarterback depends on so many other cogs and pieces to do what they got to do.
I don't think his standing as terms of where he is as a basketball great changes. But I think Dan Marino's changes dramatically. Like, if Dan Marino wins the ring.
I mean, you spent 20 minutes last week bashing Dan Marino. A lot of people don't think like that. You know, when you said that on Facebook last week, a lot of people were expressing how great they thought Dan Marino is. So it depends
the only thing they can hold against them is that he didn't win a Super Bowl because everything else is really good. Now, Jimmy opened up people's eyes to some other things, but that's the only underlying
aspect
to Dan Marino's
career. I'm not even
Marino's
talking about
career.
Just me. When you watch these things like NFL top players, I know you're not saying that, but what I'm saying is that's the only thing they say. Like, when they rank the top quarterbacks in the league, they had three different shows. One was the top quarterbacks in the league. One was the top quarterbacks of the 80s. And one was the NFL's 100 greatest players. And, I'm telling you, if he would have won a bowl, that would have changed where he ranked on every one of those shows. But
he
for Charles
been number
Barkley,
one if he won the bowl.
He wasn't number one in any of them. I mean, and the thing is, he wasn't number one in any of those things.
Oh, no, I don't think he's number one. I'm just saying he might have been closer to number one had he won a bowl.
If Chuck wins a ring, then we can stop hearing about Karl Malone and seeing him on TV looking all fat in these skeeters. Come on,
Chuck,
man.
Karl Malone is skeeters. He in the same boat. They paddling the same boat.
Right. Yeah.
But we said, we're going to keep our predictions for the Super Bowl for our Sunday show because we're going to have a special Super Bowl pregame tailgate show at 3:00 on Sunday. So if any of you fellas aren't going to be tailgating with us, you can just send us in with your predictions, and we'll get that out to the public for y'all. Yeah, I mean.
Yes, sir. Y'all, let's get out of here then, because you know it's that time.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we'd like to thank everybody for joining us in the war room this evening for our Super Bowl spectacular. We want to give a special thanks to tonight guest, Rob Parker from ESPN, and NFL Hall of Famer, Herb Adderley. We really enjoyed talking with Rob about the game and Herb about his time in the NFL, and he gave us all a history lesson. For those that didn't hear it, check out our podcast and send it to all your friends, your baby mom, your side jaunt, your cousins, and everybody so they can listen to this great show. Anyway, it ain't over. Join us on Sunday at 3 p.m. for our hour-long special, the War Room Pregame Tailgate Show. We're going to tailgate like everybody else. Anyway, until Saturday, we'll holler.
Holler.
Get at me, dog.